it's quite put me off.
Five Live Breakfast, back tomorrow from 6.
And a very good evening to you if you are just joining us. Sean Walsh and Katia Jones will dance the Charleston when they return to the Strictly dance floor on Saturday. There have been speculation that they may quit the series after they were pictured kissing. Katia Jones is married, Sean Walsh was in a relationship. Both have apologised.
Rebecca Humphries is now the ex-girlfriend of comedian and Strictly contestant then Sean Walsh. She responded to his actions with a statement posted on Twitter. It's read here by a member of our production team.
My name is Rebecca Humphries and I'm not a victim. It's incredibly good of Sean and Katia to apologise in the media, and I've received nothing other than the support of my family, friends and a host of strangers on the internet who all wanted to make sure I was okay. Those pictures were taken on October 3rd. It was my birthday. I was alone at home when Sean texted at 10 p.m. saying the two of them were going for one innocent drink. We spoke and I told him, not for the first time, that his actions over the past 3 weeks had led me to believe something inappropriate was going on. He aggressively and repeatedly called me a psycho, nuts, mental, as he has done countless times throughout our relationship when I've questioned his inappropriate and hurtful behaviour. But this whole business has served to remind me that I am a strong, capable person who is now free and no victim. I have a voice and will use it by saying this to any woman out there who deep down feels worthless and trapped with a man they love. Believe in yourself and your instincts. It's more than lying, it's controlling. It's important also to recognise that in these situations, those who hold power over you are insecure and fragile, and their need for control comes from a place of vulnerability. I think it certainly does in Sean's case. Despite everything, I hope he gets what he wants from this. I'm not sorry I took the cat, though.
Well, just to clarify that this is Rebecca Humphries' side of the story. Sean Walsh hasn't responded yet to the claims alleged there by his ex-girlfriend. He did respond on Twitter back on Sunday after the photographs were initially released of them kissing. And he said this is no excuse, but it was a one-off drunken mistake, which I'm truly sorry for. We want to focus now on what... Well, sorry, I thought that was part of the statement there. We, Tony and I, and you guys, want to have a chat now about what constitutes controlling behaviour, how you recognise it, what to do about it if you recognise some of the signs. So I just want to make a clear demarcation there. We are moving away from talking about Strictly now and just into the idea of controlling behaviour, because it has raised that issue for a few people. We've got Abigail Sinclair, who along with her daughter ended up in a women's refuge after years of psychological abuse by her partner. Ian McNichol experienced a range of abuse from his partner, but says the verbal and mental aspects were the hardest to recover from.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me? Is that Abigail?
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, don't worry, you're fine. There's probably a bit of a delay on the line. Thanks for being with us. And Ian, hello, thanks for being with us.
Hi, good evening, everyone.
Hi, good to talk to you again. And Julie Leone, who's a life coach and secondary school teacher, who's interviewed a number of women in controlling relationships for a book that she's written. Hi, Julie.
Hi, good evening.
And also Rachel Morris, who's a relationship psychotherapist, who can help shed light on what makes a healthy and unhealthy relationship. I guess we should start off with the signs of the warning signs of being in a controlling relationship. Julie.
So it starts off very incrementally. You don't really notice that you're being controlled. It may be little things like, oh, I'd rather you stayed at home rather than going out with your friends, or I prefer it if you wear this rather than that, or kind of where you find that maybe your phone has been checked. And so it's very easy to dismiss those first signs of control. And actually, to start off with, it can feel a bit like, oh, they really care what I wear or where I'm going, or it's really nice that they want to spend time with me. But as that builds up, what starts to happen is that your freedom is restricted and the other person gains more and more control over you. So they might do that by insulting how you look, putting down your friends, kind of creating a bad atmosphere if family and friends come round, so actually you see fewer and fewer people and become isolated. They might call you a liar if you say, well, you did this. They'll throw it back on you, so it's your fault. They can be very persuasive, and of course they're not always using these behaviours. Sometimes they can be absolutely charming and lovely, and then that's when you fall back in love with them, and that's very seductive.
I guess, Rachel, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, at the beginning, when you're in love and you're in the honeymoon period, you don't you would, in, as Ray, as Julie says there, see those initial signs of saying, oh well, they just want to spend more time with me, and you know, I've checked somebody's phone that I've gone out with in the past, but I didn't end up, I hope, being a really controlling, horrible person. But I have had my doubts about people in the past, and done a little bit of snooping. Does that mean you're a controlling person?
A controlling person. I guess that's about the fact that you're so insecure that you cannot possibly trust that somebody could like or love or genuinely want to be with you. So what we do with that insecurity is we direct it onto a kind of snooping or become private investigators. And what we're basically doing is trying to prove ourselves right, which is a human imperative. We must be able to trust our judgment. So if we believe that we are not worth loving, then we will keep looking for evidence that of somebody is cheating or lying until we find it. But I think that's a different thing than describing controlling or manipulative behaviour, which is much more to do with gaining control over another human being for your own safety rather than just a state of insecure paranoia.
Getting control over another human being for your own safety, what do you mean?
Well, somebody who is so far gone in that kind of insecurity, most people who engage in severely controlling behaviours have come from environments, families, childhood environments where they were never made to feel safe or loved. Now, this is not to put them into a sympathetic frame, because we all have a choice about how we behave. Some people turn their childhood trauma and misery and loneliness and they put it out in the world. You know, they blame the world. They say the world is at fault for my unhappiness. It's your fault that I feel jealous and insecure. It's your fault that I don't feel loved. You have to do better. And some of us who have difficult childhoods turn it in on ourselves. We say there's something wrong with us, that we're not lovable. We have to try harder. We have to try better. And unfortunately, if you think about it, that's a perfect pairing for a domestically abusive relationship.
Abigail, in your own scenario, I mean, as we said, you ended up in a women's refuge. You went through years of psychological abuse. Did it start off in the way that we've heard it described here, in a fairly innocent way that made it look caring, or was it very negative and obvious from the start?
No, not at all. I'd never seen anybody so beautiful. I couldn't believe that he fell in love with me. He was absolute. I mistook his obsession of me to like wanting to spend every moment with me, to the point of if he couldn't be with me, he'd be on the phone constantly. I mistook it as love. I was so flattered. I was absolutely blown away by it. And unfortunately, before I knew it, that obsession became quite claustrophobic, in as much as I lost all contact with my family, with my friends. But I genuinely believed, I honestly believed it was in the name of love. I just thought he absolutely worshipped me.
How did you come to the conclusion that it was actually a dangerous situation for you and your daughter to be in? What was it? What was the tipping point?
Well, I think that's a scary thing, because you talk to family, you talk to friends, and people don't really get it, you know, and you learn to sort of stop talking, because people will say, well, I would never put myself in that situation. I would just leave. I would never put my children through that situation. I'd just leave. Family would just be like, oh, you know, it can't be that bad.
Yeah, I think your line's a little bit dodgy, but we'll get you back, Abigail. Thank you for that. We'll bring in Ian.
Yeah, a text here just says, men are victims too. That's anonymous on the M4. Well, we've already said hello to Ian McNichol. We'll bring him back in again. Hi, Ian.
Hello.
So you experienced a range of abuse from your partner. Just one of the things that struck me that Abigail said, and I know applied to you, so just expand on it a little bit, was the way that you were eventually cut off from family and friends. How did that level of control kind of evidence itself?
Well, firstly, I would describe the process as grooming. So I was built up to be made to feel like a king. And then relationships were gradually fractured with friends and family. So if I was in the middle of a telephone call, Michelle would find a reason to get me off the phone. So those people would feel as though they were in the way and being a nuisance. She would take over phone calls if I was making them to say that I didn't explain myself very well. There was verbal insults. I was told what to wear and really quite aggressively made to feel uncomfortable in certain items of clothing that she didn't particularly like. So it was a whole cocktail of verbal insults and what I call degrading behaviour, putting times on my movements, deciding when I could go to bed, when I woke up.
Did you challenge her on any of this, or did you ask her why she was doing it? Why, and if not, why do you think she was doing it?
Sure. Well, the two points that very quickly I saw that if I challenged any behaviours, that would trigger violence, and the violence was really severe. So consequently, you try to just let those comments literally go in one ear and out the other, because what you don't want to do is to trigger the violence that has no boundaries. Therefore, you become compliant. And the more compliant I became, the more the physical, verbal and emotional abuse actually escalated. It was a lose-lose situation.
There's a text here, just as you were saying, Ian, about being told what to wear. It came in at exactly the same time. This man says, I'm 60 years of age. I'm constantly told what to wear and how to behave. My mail is opened. My friends are just about tolerated but not welcomed. And I am always the one that has to drive to and from events. I didn't think that this was controlling, and underneath it, women can be very controlling too, is it's from a different texter. And as Tony said, that anonymous one on the M4, is it more difficult as a man, do you think? It might be an obvious question to ask for help when you are being psychologically controlled by your female partner.
I think there are certainly differences. For me personally, it was all around. Making any attempt to leave would be resulting in a threat to kill. And just as a real headline to the insight, my sole means of escape, which I decided myself, was actually to plan my own suicide, because I had no hope and no control over my life.
How quickly, Ian, did the relationship reduce itself to this?
So just 6 months into the relationship was the first violent assault, and that's what I call the grooming process. And 14 months of abuse undid 3 decades of lifestyle and career choices. Lost my home, my business, everything.
Rachel, just explain for us then here, because we're making it clear. We started off by talking about Strictly, but the only reason we're talking about controlling relationships is because it's been mentioned by one of the parties involved. We're not saying this has got anything to do with any of the parties involved in Strictly, but many people have asked themselves today, well, hang on a minute, what is a controlling relationship? So these are the levels that people's lives descend to and dark times. So what should people do, Rachel? How can they get out of a relationship if they realise they're being controlled? I mean, we've heard from that texter who says he didn't even realise he was being controlled.
Yeah, I think, like has been said by your guests, there's a sense that you are being loved at first, being surrounded, being made to feel safe and warm and loved and adored in the first instance is effectively grooming. It's very similar to what happens in childhood sexual abuse as well. It's about a kind of concerted effort to make somebody relax, take their guard down, so that you can begin the systematic tearing down of everything that makes them them. It's really sociopathic and terrifying. You can spot the early signs because you feel as though you have been... It's a bit like when I'm with clients, I describe it like a ball and socket. You know, you meet a ball and socket, and then there's that... they're the socket, you're the ball, and there's this wonderful click, this sensation that you have just met your perfect partner. But the minute you want to try and change your shape or move or stretch, you can't, because the socket has got you tightly in its grip. And if you feel like that, that you can't stretch, you can't change your shape, you can't grow, you can't explore, you can't experiment, there are secrets, things that you can't share, things that you can't say, then you are in a controlling relationship, even if that doesn't include the threat of physical violence. The psychological diminishment of us as humans, our likes, our dislikes, our tastes, our ideas, our opinions, those things are what turn us into this sort of shadow of our former self, as Ian has so articulately mm-hmm. described.
And Abigail, for you, did you try and bring it up with your other half at the time? Did you try and accuse him of controlling behaviour? And what was his response to you when you confronted him?
Well, I think what I would do is I would say to him, you know, if one day our daughter brings home somebody who treats her the way that you're treating me now, what would you think? How would you feel? And his answer was, I would question what our daughter had done to that man to make him behave in that way. Mm. Everything he thought was, I thought he was doing it in the name of love. I mean, even spitting my food, you know, everything I did, the food I cooked was wrong. He'd spit it out. It was too hot, it was too cold, there were too many vegetables, there weren't enough vegetables, my hair was wrong, my clothes were wrong, sort of similar to what Ian was saying. You know, it does begin, and I know it seems to me, people don't understand it, a lot of people don't get it, but it's so gradual, it is so subtle.
And you're just all of your self-confidence presumably eroded over this long period of time. There's a phrase in it now, isn't there, Rachel, that called gaslighting, which is essentially trying to make the other person feel like they're crazy.
Absolutely.
And that it's all down, it's all in their mind, the problems in the relationship, and that is part of the control. Explain a little bit more about why it's suddenly become so prominent as a topic for discussion.
Well, it may have come about as a result of the fact that we're talking more about our personal safety, our emotional safety, which has probably been brought around as a result of social media, because it happens on social media. But I think this idea of gaslighting is just where somebody constantly undermines your version of reality. There is this idea that we have truth, that something's true or false, is nonsense. There is what is true for you and there is what is true for me. And if there isn't space for both our versions of that truth in the relationship, then one person is squashing the other one out. And I just want to say something that I think is very important, because we very often spend a lot of time talking about the abusers, about the controllers. Mm-hmm. Why do they do it? Let's pay all this attention to them. Let's not. How about we don't do that? How about we talk about how to get out?
Well,
how to protect ourselves in the future?
A text here says, being the brother of someone escaping a controlling relationship, it's painful to hear. I feel a massive sense of failing to help and recognise the signs. It's so subtle and gradual. Julie, a quick word with you. We've said that you've interviewed a number of women in controlling relationships. Is there a familiar pattern, or is each story different?
No, there are some familiar patterns, and some of them go back to childhood, which I'm sure Rachel would recognise. Some of them have had abusive childhoods, but actually there's another pattern that surprised me, which was that some have come from very lovely families where actually there is no overt conflict, there's no rows, there's a sort of sugary, happy ever after kind of story that they've grown up with, which actually then means they've got no moral and emotional compass. They've got no discernment because they've just been wrapped up in cotton wool. So that was one of the patterns. And one of the other things that we haven't touched on that was an interesting pattern is that actually once violence has happened or the threat of violence has happened, then actually people experience a really strong stress response, not dissimilar to post-traumatic stress. And of course, what that does, that stress response, it means that our ability to think logically and respond logically disappears, just as it would if you'd experienced a kind of a trauma in a war. If you're in an abusive relationship, you're facing trauma every day, and so again, incrementally, your ability to think straight, to think about how you're going to get out, where your money's going to come from, what are you going to do with the kids, all of that becomes eroded because you're so gripped with fear and terror. And so actually the denial of it's not as bad, I can just get through this, that's a really useful defence mechanism, given that you can't think straight.
Okay. All right. We've got to end it there, Sally. We've run out of time. But Julie, thank you. Thanks to Ian, Abigail and Rachel as well. Look, no, this is no implication that any of this went on in the relationship between Sean Walsh and Rebecca Humphreys. She has just mentioned today this issue of controlling relationships, and we thought we'd just have a look at some people who say they've been in one.
And just briefly, if you need any support, you can go to bbc.co.uk/actionline, or you can call for free anytime to hear recorded information on 0800 888 809.
That's it from us. We'll see you tomorrow on Drive. Right now it's 5 Live.